Hey everyone, quick note at the top that this episode involves discussion around suicide. If that's something you're not interested in hearing right now, we wanted to let you know beforehand. If you are struggling with thoughts of suicide, please connect with people you love or call or text 988 because you matter. Enjoy the show. Why is Kevin's just tidy whities? They look real bad. Like,
they do.
I don't know.
And when they show photos, that's like what they were wearing. So they're yes. Like, we gotta be accurate, but man, it's a tough look.
But like everyone else's like have color or something, and his are just like, they look like dirty tidy whities.
There's just a poop stain on the back.
He's got the skin marks.
The challengers from Denton, Texas, weighing in at a combined weight of 690 pounds, Kevin, Kerry, and David Von Erich.
Look at my beautiful brothers.
The Von Erichs are the greatest family in the history of wrestling.
Welcome to Show Me the Movies with Justin and Nick, a movie podcast hosted by lifelong cousins slash buddies that digs into movies that mean something to us and our guests. I'm Nick.
I'm Justin.
And we have Jake Hirsch with us today.
What's
Jake.
Up?
Jakey.
We have a pastor on today, Justin, so you better clean up your act.
Wow, you're outright with that information.
Deliver, yeah, seriously.
He's going to deliver the iron claw to you. We can take that out if we don't want that at the very beginning.
No, that is completely your call. We can keep it in.
All right. Jake, what movie are we talking about?
We're talking about my favorite movie of all time, The Iron Claw.
Amazing.
Favorite movie of all time?
Oh, we can get into that. But yeah, I let it sit for a little bit before making that claim. But yeah, there's a lot of reasons why I could just watch this over and over again. So
love it.
Yeah. Jake, tell us four things about yourself.
Well, you already said what I do for a living, so that's good to know. But I ride a motorcycle.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
I actually didn't know that.
I like rock and roll. I don't like wrestling, but I do love... I was trying to think of things that related to the movie.
Oh, yeah,
I do not have to relate to
Do you have a family movie. Curse or anything?
No,
or?
No family curses, no abusive father. So, yeah, we can get that out of the way.
All right, we're good.
Nice.
But, yeah. Play hockey or played growing up and still try to every once in a while and collect records. So a lot of stuff that probably relates to the movie in a lot of ways of just like an intense contact sport, rock and roll, like just going fast. Like a lot of that is just what I like to do or influences my hobbies.
What kind of motorcycle do you ride? I didn't know this.
It's a small city scrambler, Suzuki. It's nothing impressive. My wife didn't want me to get a motorcycle, so I had to get one that couldn't go above 60 miles an hour, so I wouldn't go on the highway. So, yeah, Putt around town on it. It's a fun bike for sure.
That sounds like fun.
Which one of us do you think our surname would be the one most likely to have a curse? I'm thinking it's either Chapman or Hirsch. I don't know why. That just speaks to me.
I don't know. The Chapman curse? I could see it.
Yeah.
I could see it. So we're talking about the Iron Claw. Released December 2023, directed by Sean Durkin, starring, and let me know if I miss anyone that you think is really key here, Zac Efron as Kevin Von Erich, Jeremy Allen White as Kerry Von Erich, Lily James as Pam Atkinson, Holt McCallany, I love him, as Fritz Von Erich, Harris Dickinson as David Von Erich, Maura Tierney as Doris Von Erich, and Stanley Simons as Mike Von Erich. Anyone that we're missing there that's like really key?
I don't think
so. Sounds about right.
Yeah. Oh,
so I have a little plot synopsis here. Wait, no, we're not doing that. I'm cutting that out. Screw that. We're not doing that yet. Box office. I always like to do box office.
Love it.
Budget estimated $15 million. So not huge. That's actually smaller than I thought.
It is A24.
Because this movie looks amazing and has some decently big actors. I wouldn't say there's anyone like huge at the time it was made necessarily who was like really
all up and coming. Harris Dickinson, looking back at this, I was like, whoa, Harris Dickinson's in this movie? This is crazy.
Yep. And so box office, any guess? Worldwide. We always do worldwide on here.
Mr. Worldwide.
We're 70, Mr. Worldwide.
70 million. It's my guess.
A good guess.
I was going to guess 100, but I'm also probably the worst person to be knowledgeable in this area.
Everyone says that. Every person we have on here is like, oh, I don't know. Because
it's really hard.
It's really hard to guess. I wouldn't know. I'd look it up. It made $45.2 million, which is pretty good. I mean, starting with a $15 million budget, if that actually was the budget, a lot of times budgets are hard to actually figure out. But little plot synopsis here. This is something that I wrote. Kevin Von Erich and his four brothers traverse the world of professional wrestling, the crushing brutality of their father's parenting, and come to realize that perhaps the real Iron Claw has been rigid masculinity all along. Anything to add to that plot synopsis to start us off?
I like the little cap there with the Iron Claw.
Yeah, thanks. Jake, anything to add?
No, nailed it.
So when, where, how many times have you seen this movie, Jake? Where were you and when were you when you first saw
when
this movie?
When was I? So I saw it the day before Christmas Eve. So I think it was shortly after it came out, or maybe it was opening weekend at the AMC in Castleton, Indiana.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite theaters. But since then, I have seen it four more times. Three more times by myself, and then I watched it with my wife, Katie.
Nice. What did she think?
Yeah, what did she think of it?
That's a funny question because so at one point she turned to me a couple years ago and was like, I'm done watching A24 movies because she doesn't like how you have to like dig beneath what you're seeing and what you're experiencing to like kind of figure out what's going on. Like rightfully so. And probably like a lot of people, she just really likes to be entertained and kind of just have like everything about a movie, like right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, she wasn't a huge fan of A24. So when I saw that, or when I love this movie so much, because I saw it in the theater without her, I was like, I think she'd like it though, because it's just like a good biopic. And Nick and I were talking about this earlier. There are things that you can like dig beneath the surface for, but not like as much as a typical A24 film.
Yeah.
So she liked it. She obviously was like, wow, that was so heavy. I don't know if I would watch it again like next year, but definitely liked it and appreciated it.
Yeah. For sure. Did you see it with people?
Yeah, I saw it with my buddy Micah. And that's also a funny story because I had texted him like, hey, watch this trailer. It looks super good. We got to go see it. And I was like lightly familiar with the Von Erich story. And so I knew going into it that it was going to be like crazy tragedy.
Yeah.
I didn't know the specifics really, but I just knew it was going to be heavy. And then at the end of the movie, you know, I'm just like staring at the credits, just like processing like what just happened. Oh my gosh, that was amazing. And He just turned to me and goes, what the heck? I thought that was going to be like Creed. Like he thought it was going to be a really inspiring, like, oh, they're training for this big fight and they win the big fight and then they go out. And like, just because he didn't know anything about their story. So I was cracking up after that because I was like, no wonder that he wasn't as big of a fan as I was, because he was just probably the whole movie like, wow, this is not at all like what I thought it would be.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Definitely not.
Justin, what about you?
I watched it with you and my brother on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, what a good brother movie to watch.
Truly. Yeah. But yeah, that was 2 years ago-ish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, like 2.5 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm. I looked at the date on Letterboxd, Justin. It was December 31st, 2023.
Yeah.
We probably saw it at the Landmark, I think. The Keystone, I think.
Keystone, yep.
And then I watched it again last night. And I cried alone watching it. I was like, oh my gosh, this one is, I was like, am I going to cry on this? And what really got me is the very, very final scene. That is what made me cry.
Yeah, the hardest I've ever cried at any movie.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll get into that.
Yep.
So what feelings, other than entertained, do you feel when you watch this movie, Jake?
This is going to sound very dramatic right off the bat, and we can go very deep very quickly.
Sure.
But like, and I was even thinking about it as I was going through that question. Like, the only word that really comes to mind for me is seen. Like, I felt very seen in this movie, but not for like, once again, don't have an abusive father, no family curses. Like, there, it's none of the things that.
No brothers either.
No brothers either, but I'll talk about that as well. Like,
yeah.
Like I said earlier, like the things about me, I feel like are very like masculinity, like going fast, rock and roll, just like the things you think of, like contact sports, all of that. Like when you think of typical, just like American Western masculinity. And I think for me, but I've always had like a soft side as well. So especially as the movie follows Kevin and his journey, like someone who, can like throw someone around and like have a good time, but also like he loves his brothers and wants to be near to them. And that piece as well. I have three best friends from childhood, two that I met in high school, one that I met in kindergarten.
Whoa.
And like those are my brothers. Like our relationship, the way we interact with each other, the stories and the history we have, like I feel like I grew up with those guys. So yeah, when like all the scenes that reference brotherhood and everything, like, yes, I don't have brother. I just have one older sister, but I'm like looking at the story through the lens of like my relationship with those guys. So yeah, feeling seen through, like, you can like all the stuff, you can like love to, you know, go fast and do hard things, but also like family, brotherhood, and like the more sensitive sides of life also like have a place. And so that's as I was watching, I was like, man, I just love all the dynamics here in the story of the brothers, apart from obviously the tragedy and everything else.
Yeah. I get that. It's a good movie for you, even if, yeah, you don't have brothers or like you, but you can still have that sense with your, like you said, with your friends. And I think many people, also if they don't have that, kind of long for that, like belonging to and feeling, seen, like you said, because it's a very like supportive movie between the siblings. They're like a little group. And even though they want to please their father, they're like all supporting each other, even right. Mikey, which is awesome. So I love that.
Yeah. Justin, what'd you say?
I feel sad watching this movie. It's like it's a tragedy. I just like, they're under a lot of pressure from their dad and they want to achieve great things and they want to be champions, but they're also still humans. So they try to deal with this pressure and some of the hard things they're going through in not healthy ways. Having two brothers, I see some of myself and some of us in that, where like, again, like Jake said, my dad was not abusive or anything bad. It's just like, but there is that sense of like when you're siblings, you just like come together under pressure moments or
right.
bond over certain things. So I really, also felt seen in that way too. So yeah, it was good.
I said, I feel sad. I feel a sweetness.
Sweetness, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But then also, I feel like I'm having the thought, do I like professional wrestling? Which I don't think I do, but I think that's...
I thought that this time, too. I didn't think that the first time, but now I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting.
I think that's the mark of a good movie, is that a movie that takes place in a very specific world can make you think that thing itself is interesting, even if you don't have interest in it. While you're watching the movie, you're like, oh, this is fascinating. And I think I just think this movie does a really good job of that. So what to you is true about this movie? What resonates to you as true? And I can explain more if you want me to, but you can also just run with it.
Yeah, I think I probably already hit on that on like the things that I felt, but I think, like you put it really well, there's like a sweetness there. And I think that is an overall theme that I love to like experience through movies, but also that I think has been so true in my own story and everyone's story really, is like there is still a sweetness to be found in the midst of suffering, in the midst of really hard times. And so I think that is a constant tension that I really like that this movie displays, that even in the midst of a lot of the hardship, and even especially like Kevin getting a call in the middle of the night from his brother who's like having a breakdown. It's like, but like the scene before that was him putting together their apartment with their new kid and I believe their new son at that point, and like just delighting in the really good times of life, but also having this undertone, obviously like this eerie undertone the whole time of like things are about to go wrong and be terrible. But there's like still a sweetness to be found in that. So I thought you put it well and put good language to that.
Yeah, I talked about this some in my answer to for what this movie makes you feel, but just the family pressure side of it. Like there's so many different ways to look at this movie, but I just feel like the biggest thing that rings true to me is the family pressure and how each boy wants to perform in a certain way. And even Mike, who he wants to step outside of the wrestling scene a little bit and get into music, he, I'm sure, feels that pressure, but he's doing what he wants to do, which I love that the brothers come around him too, and they take him to that.
The college party.
Yeah, the college party.
His gig.
Yeah, his gig.
His quartet gig, as he puts it.
Yeah.
He's like, my quartet with school, we have a gig. and it's like his rock band.
Yeah.
I find that very interesting that the boys all want to, well, for the most part, all want to do good by their parents. But then when, in that situation, they're like, nah, screw it. We're going to this gig.
Yeah.
It's fun. Mm-hmm.
And I love the back-to-back scenes that you see in that dynamic of they're all around the table. And Mike is like, the dad says, like, Mike's at the bottom. Like, he's the least favorite. But the rankings can always change. And then, like, it's either the next scene or a couple scenes later is them picking him up from, like, practicing in a garage. And they're like, getting out of the truck, clapping and cheering for him. Then they go and like float down the river and like just hang out and like get burgers. And it's like, man, that dynamic there is like so, so pressing, but like so sweet at the same time that like they're sitting around a breakfast table watching him get berated by their father. But now they're like supporting him the next, you know, the next scene or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Very early in the movie, Kevin says, Dad's too tough on Mike, Ma. You got to say something. And Mom basically blows it off and is like, it's between the two of them. And the thing of like family roles and responsibilities, who feels responsible to do what, or who feels like they even can do what, like Doris, the mom in this movie, has very little agency. Like, she's amazing. And Maura Tierney plays her super well because there are just a few scenes that she gets where she is like, I don't know, that she's just doing amazing from a performance standpoint.
They don't waste her time on screen.
No,
at
for
all.
Sure.
Yeah.
But she is a person with very little agency. She's there with all of these boys, and it's very clear that Dad is the dictator of this household, essentially. And I don't know, Kevin like wanting his mom to intercede for his brother in a way that maybe she could, but also like it's so, the dad here is so oppressive in a big way that it's just like really hard. And so just like this whole thing of like, well, and then later in the movie when Carrie is like having a mental breakdown, it's Carrie, correct?
Yeah.
Yes. Carrie's having a mental breakdown and Kevin's talking to his dad and he's just like, Dad, help him out. And he's like, oh, you guys need to figure that out on your own. And it's really interesting what Dad wants to take responsibility for and what he does not want to take responsibility for. Mm-hmm. And just what, like, the responsibility that the brothers feel towards and to each other.
Dad is super frustrating. Yeah, and I also forgot that how early on he just sucks. Like, the first thing that you hear from him, early on is the ranking thing, and I'm like, oh,
yeah,
okay, forgot about that.
Well, even the movie opens up where it's him fighting, actually. Uh-huh. It's like flashback scene from when the kids are little, and I think they're in the car, and he, like, either bought a new car or, like, a new camper or something like that, and it's just like,
he bought the Cadillac.
Yeah, very early on, like,
we can't afford this.
Yeah, and he's just like, no, we're good. Like, I'm going to be the best. I'm going to be the heavyweight champion. Like, right, the first scene is literally, like, him standing his ground and like you're figuring out who he is, which I think is so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That opening scene is amazing as well, where it's also, first of all, the black and white photography just like
looks
amazing. Good. But then how he's just like stomping that guy and like the sweat's falling, and you're like, what is happening? Like, this looks like someone's getting murdered. yeah, it's amazing. Justin?
No,
I'm
not.
You want to say something?
No, I have nothing to say.
Well, I kind of have a lot here. I mean, just on a professional wrestling note, okay, something that really stood out to me this watch is like professional wrestling is melodrama. So it made me think of John Woo and Michael Mann because they're both movie directors who do crazy action, violence, like wild movies, but there's a big sense of emotion in them as well. And I also thought of anime and soap operas and just opera because all of those things are in a lot of ways really over the top. Emotion is super displayed, and a lot of the themes are just like out there to the highest level. And that just kind of made me think of it. And also, like, I think professional wrestling is a really interesting thing because it's like you see this exaggerated emotion, but it's like a masculinely acceptable display of emotion, even though it's literally like buff dudes in their underwear, like grappling each other, which
I think there's a key conversation that happens early on from the movie where between Kevin and what's his wife's name?
Oh my gosh.
Is it Pam?
Yes.
Pam.
It is Pam.
And she's like, isn't that all fake? And he's like, no.
Yeah.
Because honestly, there's so many people out there, including me, that are like, that stuff's fake, right? Like, it's not real. So I think that helps with the movie to be like, no, this stuff is real to us. And we're not just like we're not conning you. We're actually into this and trying hard. We're not, yeah, this isn't, it, there is showmanship, but you're also, there is, like, Mikey's trying to get into wrestling later on. And he can't, he's not really good at it. You have to be good at it.
And they're like, it's a performance. So, like, if you perform well, then you, it also, like, is almost, not to get too high on my own farts over here, but here I was thinking of this as a commentary. This is so pretentious, but I'm going to say it because it's a thought that I had.
Please do.
When she asks that and he says that, I'm like, this is like a commentary on movies because he's saying it's not real, but it's true. Like in movies, you're watching people do things that aren't real. They're not, people are not actually dying. People are not actually, you know, whatever, but it resonates as true to people watching it. And I was just thinking of that in this with professional wrestling. It's not real. It's staged. But, like, the emotion is true. And people are, like, following stories that they find very powerful. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I love – I actually had that as one of my favorite quotes when he goes – he's like, fake? There's nothing fake about what we do. And it's like – it's not even like, oh, well, kind of. Like, but not really. Like, here's the details. Like, right away he goes in defensive of, like – no, there's literally not 1 ounce of anything fake here, which I think is really funny. Like, especially as someone who was sitting there watching the movie, wondering, like, are they going to talk about how, like, wrestling is not, like, it's not like high school or college wrestling where there's, it's like, this is way different. And I love that they, like, address that head on.
Yeah.
And that was even, like, that was something that Katie said was helpful for her when watching the movie of, like, I was actually able to get more invested in it because I knew, like, the explanation behind what wrestling is as someone who, like, never watched it or never was into it. So I thought that was really helpful too.
Yeah.
Something, Carrie's story, I did not personally resonate with in my own life, but I have seen people in my own life where, so Carrie is the one who's, like, doing a traditional actual sport, like he's doing disc, and he's going to go to the Olympics. And then we see Jimmy Carter say, sorry, guys, we are not supporting the Ruskies. And so then he can't do that. And his identity is super wrapped up in that. And his, like, and that achievement, like, he is actually really good at this. And you get the sense, I think, early on that he has just poured his life into disc. And when he can't do that, you see, and who knows how present this was beforehand, but you see a lot of addiction and you see a lot of, like, who am I? What can I latch on to here? And I think that people who are singularly focused on a sport a lot of times, when that's taken away, there's, like, a big, like, and of course it can, their stories can be way different and far more hopeful than Carrie's, but, like, there's this, like, what do I do? Like, I've poured everything into this and then I got an injury and, like, I can't, like, do this thing that was kind of everything for a long time.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because there's an interview with Kevin Von Erich from, like, a year ago. It was after the film came out, and there's a, this is a different layer of the movie, but, like, they definitely portray the father, like, it's Hollywood, of course it's gonna happen, like, they portray the dad as way more brutal than he was in real life. Like, Kevin will actually, like, defend his dad in a lot of interviews of, like, yes, he was tough on us, but, like, the movie really, like, took it to another level. But he said that a lot of people have just assumed, whether it's from the movie or whether it's from just knowing the family story, that Carrie took his own life because of, like, how the dad treated him. But Kevin says, he goes, no, it's because of just the spotlight. Like, it's because of being in the spotlight and having so many expectations on you from being an Olympian to then, like, trying to be the heavyweight champion. Like, that's what drove him to take his own life, which I thought was so interesting that he addressed Carrie specifically. Like, it, that, I think that paints a more realistic picture of, like, everything you're referring to as well.
I saw that he said that, and I thought that was interesting because when I watch the movie, I do not think of Carrie's suicide as, like, oh, that's just completely
his dad.
I mean, I see the dad as a factor there, but I also am like, I don't, that is, it feels far more complex. And I think the spotlight thing, I mean, I feel like that's in the movie because he's calling and he's like, I can't be, but I think that's interesting that Kevin is, like, defensive about that.
Yeah.
Because I wonder, and by the way, this does not mean that the dad was or wasn't this way in real life, but I wonder if the Kevin character in the movie would say the same thing about his dad. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, the dude is probably, what, in his 60s or 70s? Like, you're so removed from that time where, and as we know, like, you know, our generation too, you'll hear your parents say things about like how they were raised and you're like, wow, mm-hmm. that would be like neglect or abuse, yeah. like categorized in this day and age. And so you wonder how much of it is like separated from that as well. And I think probably the scene that drives that point home for some people is when after he loses his leg and his dad is like in the ring with him outside, like basically forcing him to like get up and like retry and like
still. Oh, that's with Kevin. Kevin and Carrie.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I just forgot that detail then, because that is like, I'm sure for them, it's like, okay, the family is like maybe driving this more because they're still forcing him to wrestle after he lost his leg. So I don't know if that like also people saw that and were like, oh, it must just be the family or must just be how the dad was pushing him or something like that.
Yeah. I read it as he wanted to keep trying, but yes. I don't think there is any separating his desire to do that with the family. Like there's so much that you internalize just from growing up in a context that like you can't divorce yourself from.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I think that's interesting. I think that's really interesting. And I'd be fascinated to know what that dad was really like, because I think, because in the movie, the brothers defend him. That's all they do is defend him.
Right.
Except for the one time where Kevin breaks in the movie and attacks his dad. But it's just like everyone's defending his dad all the time, which is, again, not to say that anything is or isn't like real or true. But yeah, I think that's really interesting. Yeah. Just another thing that I was like, wow, this is kind of, I don't know, I really resonate with this. The mom saying like religious platitudes at times where it's like all she knows how to do, and I think it's completely well-intentioned, but is just be like, well, like God loves you. There's a part where she says that to, I think she says it to Mikey. She's just like, after he like has his injury and stuff, and he's just like sitting there, and he's like complaining about something very real to him. And she's like, God loves you. And it's like, that I think is coming from a good place from her, but like that's not helpful to him in that moment to just hear that, because he's complaining about a very concrete issue and she's like abstracting it. And not to get too theological, but like the thing that I think is beautiful about the theology of Jesus is like he is that like fully out there God who is infinite but also like a human person who has suffered. And I think that when religion is just this abstract thing or this like out there kind of thing or this thing where it's like, oh, you just need to know that God loves you in your head, like that's not anything that's going to help someone when they are like in need. And even like when you see them in church looks like a very like just kind of sitting there like and then they leave and it's like I don't know, that stood out to me as I was watching it.
Yeah, and I think it's there's maybe an image thing there as well, where like outside the church, but while they're walking in, the dad's like standing out there shaking people's hands. And like, so then there's that aspect of like, okay, this is like a cultural thing too, where if we're doing this and we're just keeping up this habit, or, you know, we're telling our kids, oh, God loves you, like that'll just make us feel really good about ourselves that we're doing the right thing, or people will view us as we're doing the right thing, which I find really interesting too, because obviously that applies to a ton of how people view, approach, and practice religion today, where maybe it's more image and how does this help me and how I'm viewed rather than how is this truly transforming my life and my heart and like serving, how am I serving my family well through this?
Yeah, right. Oh, man. Yeah, just a few other things. Zac Efron looks like he's made of marble in this movie, like made of stone.
No, literally, he does.
And he looks like that in the way that, like, of course, his face and his body is very chiseled, but he looks like he's made of stone when he moves.
Yeah.
He is not flexible. Like, he looks like if you, like, bend him more than, like, 20 degrees any direction, he'd just, like, break. Like, when he runs at the end with his kids, I'm like, this looks weird. Like, he just looks really
strange.
When he's
running at the beginning, it feels like all that's moving is his legs and his arms, but, like, his torso, chest, and head are just, like, straight ahead.
They're always just so static.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, I don't know if you guys read anything about this. I did not. Like, how much his face shape is makeup and how much, like, I'm just going to assume, maybe this isn't fair, that he was, like, doing testosterone and steroids.
Well, I've been waiting to say it this whole time. He must have been on roids.
I mean, which is like, typical movie star thing. And I think that, like, you know, whatever. Like, if you are an adult and you're not in a competitive sport, like, you do you in this regard. Like, there are safer ways to do it and non-safer ways to do it. I'm not going to do it. Yeah. It's probably not super healthy, but like, what happened here?
Well, he looks different between the other guys too, with Jeremy and Harris, right?
Harris,
like,
yeah,
they're buff and they're like clearly in shape, but when you see like shots of them next to each other all shirtless, you're like, Zac Efron just looks like on a whole nother level.
Yeah, like he's like 3% body fat.
Yeah.
He also looks like just super barrel chested.
Yes.
Like he's just like, it's just a really interesting look.
He's like a human Donkey Kong.
He's super real, except a very clean shaven Donkey Kong.
Yes. Is there anything more unflattering than Tidy Whitey's?
Like, okay, I had that in our
boots.
In our question,
with boots,
our question section. Why is Kevin's just Tidy Whitey's? They look real bad. Like,
they do.
I don't know.
And when they show photos, that's like what they were wearing. So they're like, we gotta be accurate, but man, it's a tough look.
But like everyone else's like have color or something, and his are just like, they look like dirty Tidy Whitey's.
There's just a poop stain on the back.
He's got the skin marks. Oh gosh. There's one other weird dumb thing that something that I was like, oh, I feel this. Kevin screwing up his delivery on the event promo.
Oh, my
where
gosh.
Where he's just like, you've been bad-mouthing us for too long. Oh, all right, let's do it again. And I was just like, oh, that's like me and Justin on the pod.
Exactly.
I was like, welcome to show me the blah, blah, dang it. No, okay, we're doing it again.
I am not a talker, so when he did that, I was like, yep, that's me, dude. I cannot get a sentence out sometimes when I need to.
His brother's just back there laughing at him.
Yeah, he just like makes a little smirking sound or whatever, and he's like, shut up.
Yeah, he's like, I didn't say anything.
Well, eventually he's just like, you get up here and do it. And it's just like so funny, just like that dynamic.
Yes, it is funny.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much the whole reason why he gets the invite later on, right?
Yeah.
Like his brother, because he can actually talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is just funny.
Well, and then when he does like the heavyweight thing and his brother takes the mic from him.
I was about to say that too.
Yeah.
Because he's talking and he's just like, you came in here, and then his brother takes it and just finesses the mic, and he's pissed later. He's like, dude, you should have let me talk. He's like, I thought I was trying to help.
Yeah, he's like, you weren't talking though.
Yeah. Anything to you that is not true about this movie that you don't vibe with or you think the movie puts forth and you're like, I don't like this?
Not much for me.
There's like the storytelling aspects of it, which we already covered, of like that Hollywood is obviously, you know, they're always going to try to beef up the story more. But what I was so shocked by is that there is another brother, Chris, that they don't include in the movie.
Oh, weird.
So there was another, so how many are in the movie? Four? Four in the movie.
And then the first brother, who's their oldest brother, who died in like a bad accident.
Yeah,
somehow.
Jackie, I believe, was his name. But so, yeah, in total, there's six brothers, but the movie only features four and talks about the fifth, but they don't even like reference that there's a sixth.
Doesn't exist.
Yeah. So interesting there that like in the midst of Hollywood being like, let's make this the most like intense, traumatic version of this story by elevating the dad's intensity and abuse, they left out like a crucial aspect, which a lot of the interviews with the writers, directors is all like, you can't accurately and intentionally develop another character that when he takes his life, Chris, I believe was the other brother, that it would feel like, it wouldn't just feel like a throw in of like, oh, well this happened at some point, like how they were able to develop the other four that they did feature. So I just thought that was interesting. Not necessarily like something that's not true for me, but just, I never would have known that until I went home and researched more about the story after seeing the movie for the first time.
That's crazy. Also crazy that like they have five deaths then in the family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so many.
I think I, like, if I were part of this family, I'd probably have some feelings about that and be like, dude, you just completely like cut out this person who really mattered. I do think from a story standpoint, I think the movie's better off as is.
Right.
Because I don't want to see a 2-hour and 45-minute version of this that like, and the director had talked about having like a sense of repetition at that point, which is like, I don't know.
There definitely is a sense of repetition.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing I said for not true is when the parents leave Kevin's wedding to have sex, I'm like, ugh, I just like to pretend my parents don't know what sex is and have never had it. But
they've only had it two times for you and your sister.
They had it once for me, once for my sister, and then it's just they're completely non-sexual humans now.
Yeah. I don't know. The more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm like, maybe I would like a 2-hour, 45-minute version with that brother. I just liked things move after the first half. Things move fast.
Yeah,
like I could have slowed down a little bit and gotten a little deeper into some stuff.
I really like the pacing.
You do,
especially. Okay. I think movies right now are just so many of them. Like, should lose 15 minutes. Some of them are like, you should lose 20. And this one, I'm like, I wouldn't really cut anything. And I think that I like the pacing. I like how it goes. Where it starts off, and then you see a lot of the wrestling stuff. It really throws you in there, and the dad's there the whole time.
Throws you into the ring, per se.
Yes. And you're following Kevin as a through line. But then also, like, I forgot how quickly it ended after, like, the walk with my brothers scene.
Yeah.
Then it's like, boom, 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 and then it's done. And I was like, whoa. And it was a little abrupt, but I actually like that it wraps up so quickly because it feels like thematically – it starts slow, then in the middle, and then like the last like quarter, a little more, like really throws in a lot, and then it all culminates, and then it just sort of like wraps up nicely. I think I really like the pacing of this movie.
Especially, I was actually watching a YouTube creator who compared it to other like quote unquote biopics that came out that year. So you have like Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon. And then Oppenheimer. Oh. All like, I think the average runtime between the three of them was like a little over 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So she actually said, she was like, why I felt like this movie was so refreshing in so many ways is because it tells a really captivating and really intense story, but it's able to like almost give you everything you want in a little over 2 hours.
For sure.
Rather than feeling like with those other movies where like, yes, some were good, some were bad, but like, you have some that are 3 hours and 40 and are like needing intermission, and you have others where it's like, oh, a just as like rich and intense story was told in 2:15, which I just think that was really interesting too, like when you compare it to what else was coming out around the same year or the same time.
I
don't have a problem throwing this movie on, but like on a Thursday night throwing on Oppenheimer, I'm like, oh gosh, I gotta mentally prepare for this 3 hours of this.
Oh, Oppenheimer. That one I think could be a little shorter. In my opinion.
No, but you are right. Like, there's been so many movies over the past couple of years. Like, the one that sticks out to me is the Batman, the Robert Pattinson one, where, like, I got to the end and I was like, 45 minutes of that could have been cut. And, like, granted, that's very cynical, but, like, I freaking love that movie, and I still thought, like, wow, that could have been a lot shorter. So I think those, like, longer movies are just becoming more of the norm when it's a very, like, intense or darker story.
Yeah.
Because they feel like the character development has to be there, which I appreciate. But yeah, definitely resonate with what you said, Nick.
I really like the Batman, and I agree with you. Maybe not 45 minutes, but at
least
15. Yeah,
that was a hot take while the credits were rolling.
Yeah, but like there are some movies where it's just like, okay, I don't know. The Substance is 2 hours and 20 minutes long.
That feels long
to me, but that's my opinion. Some people probably feel differently. Okay. Ripley reaction. I have to share this.
Oh, wow. Crosby didn't care for this movie whatsoever. He was out.
Just completely out?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Ripley. I actually didn't watch this movie with Ripley because I was watching it last night late. I was like, I gotta do my homework. And Hannah was, like, asleep, and Ripley was in there. But the thing that I had to bring up Ripley for is that sometimes I like to iron claw Ripley. like, obviously not in a painful way, but I like to...
Until Ripley. His eyes squeeze out.
I'm like, Ripley, I'm delivering the iron claw to you. And, like, grab his head, and he's just like... those are the sounds he makes.
Well, now you say it, I feel like that's something I do as well to my dog, Sully, where it's just like when you just like hold their face, just like kind of mess with them. But I'm like, wait, I'm doing that
Can you even
that
get your
right
hand
now.
Around Sully's head?
Oh, no, it barely covers his eyes. But
I freaking love Sully. He's the best.
I love Sully, too.
Also, Jake Hirsch witnessed the most awful thing Ripley's ever done, and I'm not going to say what it is, but it was like there were quite a few people at our house, and Ripley did a terrible... Do you remember what
you
did?
Yeah, of course I do.
Yes.
It was also during or right before we watched Despicable Me 4. So it is movie related. So
it
does relate.
It was horrible. I literally picked him up and like took him out of the house. I like perp walked
him. I've never
seen
you move so quick.
I was like actually ashamed. I was like, how dare you, Ripley? You... Yes. Okay.
That's how...
Sorry. We're moving on.
Sounds like he murdered someone.
Yeah, honestly, he took lives that night.
We're like almost on par. Not quite. But anyway.
What's that Sabrina Carpenter song where she's like, just don't embarrass me or whatever?
Oh, please, please, please.
Yeah, please, please, yeah, please.
Sing
yeah.
that to Ripley.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. he's a creature developed in a lab to have no shame. Okay. What character is the best hang? What character is the worst hang? Jake, we're going to start with you. Who's the best hang?
I mean, my initial reaction is Mike, because
ooh.
I feel like he, even though there obviously is the darker side to his place in the family, like, he can dish it out. He can, like, when they're sitting around the table and they're talking about, like, you need to wrestle, he's like, yeah, I think he says something like, I'm the only one that doesn't wrestle, but I can still eat more than all of you. And yeah. it's like, that's just brothers at its finest. But also, I think there's just, like, a grit to him that I really like. And also, like you said, my quartet has a gig and then he's playing with a rock band. yeah. Like, that's one of my favorite scenes in general. And there's a lot of cool, like, fun facts around that party scene that we can talk about a little bit too that I just love. But yeah, I think for me, like, that just seems like a cool, chill guy to hang out with.
Yeah. I like that you brought up that he holds his own. Like, he has to find his own coping skills within that family dynamic because he is very clearly the weakest mm-hmm. physically, and also just not having the same interests as everyone else. And it's just like, you got to figure out what you're going to do
there. Yeah. And for a lot of people, that would almost hold you back from, like, I'm going to kind of tiptoe and be a little nervous around my brothers because I'm so different than them. But man, yeah. It's such, like, a great picture when they pick him up from that band practice in the garage. They're cheering for him, and then he just walks towards the car just all confidently, is like, we gonna grab burgers? Like, you don't yeah. do that unless you've got some sort of, like, place totally. Or ownership in the group, which I think is so good.
Slash feels safe. If you don't feel yeah. safe or, like, seen right. by your brothers, you're not gonna just be yourself like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah. Sure. I think the front runner for me is Kevin. I love him. And yeah. the other guy I was thinking about was, I forget what his name is in the movie, but Harris Dickinson's character.
Yeah, David.
David.
Yeah.
I love David.
I think David's a real one.
He is a real one.
Yeah.
He seems like he's got a sense of humor because he's laughing at him while Kevin's trying to do that promo. And he also, I don't know, he seems like a good guy.
Yeah. I said Pam for best hang because
Pam.
She's what?
The
what
Office.
Is that? Oh, yes. my favorite from The Office is Pamela, when he's just calling her on her phone. He's like, Pamela. I said Pam because she is immediately sweet and understanding and kind. And she also just, like, with grace, puts up with just all of Kevin's bullshit where he is. And that's a little unkind to maybe call it that because, like, he's going through it. But he doesn't know how to handle it. But that's really not completely excusable because he's putting his wife through, like, basically being a single mother, and he can't figure it out. And I don't think he has the skills or the resources or the acceptance to figure it out. But, like, she just endures a lot, and she also is just, like, nothing but amazing the entire time. And she just seems like she's fun and nice, and she, like, educates Kevin on a lot of things. I don't know.
No, it's good.
What about the worst hang? Who's the worst hang here?
I think there's a clear answer.
Fritz. I think there's a clear answer.
Oh,
yeah.
Why is he the worst hang? I thought he was a pretty nice guy.
Yeah.
Pretty cool dude.
I think they, yeah.
pretty chill.
You really warm up to him halfway through the film.
Yeah.
You're going to, like, drop something in your house, and he's like, you got to die for that. Get that. I'm like, gosh.
Well, also, yeah, the movie ends on, like, his wife also, like, not making him dinners and yep. like, just being like, you can figure it out. And that's.
I love when he walks in. He's like, what are you doing? She's like, painting. He's like, well, what's for dinner? And she's like, I'm not hungry. That is the best. I'm not hungry. And he's like, oh,
dude,
like
that was that was my parents once I left after high school. My mom was like, not in a bad way, but my mom's like, I've been cooking for 30 years. I'm done cooking. You. Dad, you can figure out dinner. I'm fine.
I love it.
Yeah, I feel like the times where when I would come home from college and it would definitely increase where my dad would just come home from work and just grab, like, meats and cheeses out of the fridge and just have that for dinner. Yeah. In high school, it's just like, oh, there was something every night. Like,
yes.
That was, like, definitely a luxury of growing up in my home, which obviously you had too. But, yeah, then it's funny. I'm like, yeah, it's different now, man.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I said, Dad, yes. I said honorable mention Ric Flair. He's such a douche.
It's hard to be humble when you look like Ric Flair.
Ric Flair. He is also, do a little reading on Ric Flair if you're curious. He's just a
yeah.
He is a weird dude. Yeah, he's such a jerk. And also, like, I think what really did it for me, where I was like, I hate this guy, is after they fight, comes into the locker room, he's like, oh, man, we gotta have some beer, you know, or we can get fucked up around here. And he's just like, I don't really think.
Yeah,
I
he's
want
like, I'm
to.
Good.
I'm
yeah.
good. And he's like, okay. And then he just cracks a beer and you just listen to him drink it. He's like,
so gross.
Like, this guy's disgusting. I hate this guy. Okay. We've kind of done this throughout. But fun facts. Any fun facts that you have to share?
One of my favorite things about like how they made this movie and just the intentionality around that party scene with the song that they play. Mm-hmm. Like that's an original song that mm-hmm. they wrote for the movie. They played it also at the party. The band that's playing with Mike, they're called Lovers. They're like a Louisiana-based rock band.
That's cool.
And so it's really cool that like they could have easily, I feel like, just written that scene and had Mike play, you know, some like Zeppelin or Skynyrd song just mm-hmm. from like the time that would have been like, it would have fit well, it would have been cool.
Sure.
But like the fact that it was a song written for the movie, but also fits the vibe of that scene and like what's going on so well. Like it's a good song, but it's not amazing. It just
yeah.
sounds like garage rock. And like Mike is like very, he's matching that energy too of just like, I'm nervous to play this, but also mm-hmm. like, this is a sick moment. I'm playing at a college party. So I just thought the way they like really dove in on that scene was really cool. And also in a lot of the interviews with the brothers, they talk about how party scenes are like really hard to shoot because you're just having to like do things over and over again. And they said it was like one of the most fun scenes they've ever like had to act through in their career because it was so natural. And
yeah.
I think the way they created like a true 80s college party vibe and just made it really fun. It didn't have to be like the serious thing outside of Carrie's keg stand, which I just thought when he rips off his shirt after, I'm just like, heck yeah. Like,
yeah, that was
yeah,
sick.
Let's go. What a killer thing to include there.
Yep. Kev's like, look at my beautiful brothers.
Look at my beautiful brothers. I love what you said about, you can tell he's nervous, but he's loving it.
Yeah.
Like when every time he plays the guitar riff, you're like, oh yeah, you're like, you can tell he's nervous, but
yes.
he's like living in that moment and getting after it as hard
yeah.
as he can.
And I love that it's I'm pretty sure it's almost the full song or the full song in general. So it's not just like, hey, here's him singing a verse and a chorus of the song and then it flashes to
yeah.
the next scene. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You get this whole vibe of him playing the song, his brother supporting him, what's going on around them at the party. Which, yeah, I just thought was amazing.
Yeah.
My one fun fact was that there's a Jaws reference when they're in the apartment and they are realizing they have too many family members now, Kevin and Pam, and she says, we're going to need a bigger boat.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Fun fact, I iron-clawed myself yesterday.
See how much it hurts?
Well, yeah, because it's like, and you can only really do it to yourself so much, I think, but like I was like, does that, because like, you know, it's professional wrestling. A lot of it is over exaggerated and fake.
It's not
like,
fake.
Would that actually, okay, yes, it's all real. But I'm like, would that actually hurt? And when you just like grab your forehead, you're like, not really. But if you get your pinky and your thumb on each opposing temple
yeah.
and you squeeze, that does not feel good. If someone was doing that to me, it would not be
Ric Flair is bleeding on his head.
Yeah,
afterwards.
I'm like, where's the blood coming from when
he
comes in?
Scratched him or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess he's got to have some talons on there. Another, this is not a fun fact. Actually, a lot of these facts are not fun.
Sad fact.
But Fritz Von Erich. So do you guys know about the name thing? They mention it. They mention it in the movie, but they gloss over it.
Oh, how he changed his name?
Yes.
Yeah.
But he did it in a way to play up the Germanness because he basically played a Nazi heel.
Oh my gosh.
Because like in wrestling, the heel is like the quote unquote bad guy. But he was basically like taking on like a Nazi-ish persona, which is very uncool. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, in real life, Kevin and Pam had two girls before having two boys. But this is another thing that I think speaks to like good movie making is that narratively, it just works really well to have those two boys there.
Right.
And so, yeah. But they did eventually have two boys as well. We touched on this. You touched on this. Kevin Von Erich not happy with how his father is portrayed.
Yeah.
This is an actual fun fact, I think. Zac Efron is 5'8", and Jeremy Allen White is 5'7".
They're short.
And
boys.
This is, and that's what's listed online, so who knows? They
but
could,
in the movie,
they might be 4 feet
they might
tall.
Be lying.
Kevin is 6'2", and 222 pounds.
Yeah. They do make Zac Efron look big. You texted in our chat, Justin. You were like, you're like, Zac Efron and Jeremy Allen White are both like little dudes. And I was like, I always got the sense in watching things with Jeremy Allen White that he's small. He looks like strong, but he does not look like a large framed person. But like Zac Efron, I always thought was bigger. Maybe it was the High School Musical of it all.
Yeah, because he probably, in high school, you don't, I don't know. But if you haven't seen season 3 of The Bear, have you?
Not.
No, a couple episodes in.
Okay, so at one point, Jeremy Allen White talks to Joel Edgerton? No, not Joel Edgerton. No.
Joel Osteen.
Joel Osteen.
Got him.
I forgot his last name, but
Joel
the guy
McHale.
From, yeah, Joel McHale.
He pointed at you, too. He's like, got him.
Yeah. Yeah. But he looks up at him in a scene because he's like 5'7", and Joel McHale is like probably 6 foot or taller. And it's like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Carmi's short.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like 5'7 is Tom Cruise level short, which is just kind of crazy.
It's also wild when you look at photos of the real Von Erich brothers. Like they just look massive in these photos. And I think like the movie did make them look big, but then you see like a side by side and you're like, oh yeah, they were way bigger than the actors playing them.
Harris Dickinson's the only one that looks big, like tall and big.
Yeah. The only other thing here, this isn't a fact other than it's a preference. Holt McCallany, I love him. He is one of my favorite character actors because he's Fritz in the movie. He is so good at playing. There's two roles that he's really good at playing. One is a human piece of garbage, but like a hyper-masculine one. And then the other one, and this is related to the hyper-masculine one, is like a general or something or Fed. So he's been in Fight Club.
Who is he in Fight Club?
I'm pretty sure he's Robert Paulson.
His name was Robert
Paulson.
No,
he's not. He's not. Because Robert Paulson is Meatloaf.
I think so.
I can't remember.
Right?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. But McCallahanny is one of the guys who's doing Project Mayhem is saying his name was Robert Paulson. McCallahanny is the guy who's the auto mechanic who has the hose and is like spraying the priest.
Oh, yeah.
Or he's walking by to get in a fight. But he's also in Mission Impossible 8, a movie I didn't like, but he plays one of those roles. He's in The Amateur, another movie I didn't like, but I like him in it. And he's also in, you know what he's in, Justin? It's one that I talk about a lot.
I don't know.
He's in Black Hat. He's with Viola Davis. He and Viola Davis are the feds.
Okay.
And have you seen Black Hat, Jake?
No, I haven't.
Oh, Jake. You gotta watch Black Hat. I'll watch it with you anytime.
Amazing.
Anywhere. It's very good.
He does
but don't read
good
about
fed.
It.
Okay,
online,
I won't.
Because some people don't like it. Just kidding. You can do whatever you want. You're an adult. all right. Anything else, you guys?
I think something that's really interesting is how they shot the wrestling scenes. So a lot of times when, you know, big crowds are in movies or like they work in a lot of the audio, like they tell the people who are in the crowd, like, hey, get into it and like act like you're cheering, but don't make any noise. And then a lot of the crowd noise is worked in post. And they actually had like, or you'll see like videos where like only an eighth of the arena is filled because that's all they need to like film that shot. But they actually filled like a whole wrestling gymnasium and then had the all the people screaming. So like all the crowd noise is like actually real in the movie, but also it was cool to hear about from the actors how much that helped them film and like get into the wrestling scenes.
Yeah.
Because you're not walking into this like quiet room. You're like, when you're walking through the tunnel, you're walking into like a couple, you know, 100, if not 1,000 people like screaming for you. And like you're filming these wrestling scenes in that environment. So I just thought that was really cool. Like it's just something that often like gets overlooked in those scenes.
For sure.
I would agree. I don't know why you wouldn't do that more.
Right.
Get that real feel when you're acting.
Yeah. It's probably harder to capture audio stuff, but then also you have to pay all the extras and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, that's really cool. It also, you can, like, it definitely feels that way throughout the movie. Some of the stuff, I wonder, and I don't know, I didn't read anything about this, I wonder how much stunt doubles were in it and how much are the guys, because, like, there are some shots with them jumping off the ropes and doing crazy stuff, and, like, you see their faces. It really looks like them if it's not. And so I just thought that was really interesting. Like the suplexes and all of the crazy jumping off the ropes. And like one of my favorite things is the jump and I'm going to like flying squirrel wrap my torso around you. And they like jump and catch them. And it's like crazy.
Yeah.
What should you pair this movie with? So you can pair it with literally anything within the human experience. It doesn't have to just be one thing either. What would you say?
I think this is because I accidentally did this when I watched it with Katie, actually, where I was at the gym that day and was lifting and then got home. We ate dinner and then we watched the movie. And it just felt like I could watch the movie and not feel guilty like I'm lazy. Like, oh, no, I actually went out and did this. So, because there's movies like that. And I would say Creed, to bring that up again, like is another one where you just like feel so motivated. Like, I'm going to get in the gym or like, I, you know, do all these things. And so whether it's going on a run, lifting, whatever it is, like some sort of physical activity pairs really well with this movie because it focuses so much around that.
For sure.
I said a nice glass of whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Just felt right. And early on when Fritz tells Kevin that he's going to have a chance to be world champion or whatever, he gives him a glass of whiskey. It just feels like it fits.
I said Death of a Salesman, the play. I don't know if I like it or not, but I remember reading it for a class in high school, like in class, and it's very depressing, but it also reminded me of the beginning of the movie with Fritz Von Erich, where he's like, I'm providing for my family, but like I have to do it through this way, because later on you learn he had the opportunity to have a big music scholarship and all of that, and he's like, nah, I'm playing football at this dinky college. And it's like this whole The Death of a Salesman is like, I have to provide for my family. I'm a man. I have to do this in this particular way, and I have to be successful and also perceived by my family as very successful. But then I also said therapy because therapy could have been really helpful for a lot of people in this movie. And it's like just the lengths that the men in this movie go to not talk about either their feelings or the dynamics that are animating all of them is crazy. Whereas you get to Kevin and he's like just zoned out and just dazed all the time. And just, I'm like, you should probably talk to someone. It might help.
Yeah. Goes a long way.
Yeah. Are we ready for quote tennis?
I only have a few.
Oh, that's fine.
Feel like this is, it's not the most quotable movie.
Yes.
Like there's nothing where you're, it's nothing very profound, but it's also nothing like mundane at the same time. Or like, it's not like there's not a ton of comedic relief past the first 30 minutes either. But I do have, I love when Pam asks him what he wants and he just said more ribs. I just think that's like, once again, a beautiful portrayal of Kevin's character, his personality, that like, even though his dad is like pushing it on him in the movie to, you got to be the best, you got to be the champion. But like none of that is fueling his ego to the point where like he would answer that on a first date. It's more ribs and I want to be the world heavyweight champion. So like those are in order and it's like, but that's it. But it wasn't like, I want to be the best. I want to be like, I got to be the greatest. It's just, no, I just want to be the champion of the league that I'm in. Like says it very nonchalant, which I just think is really cool.
Very sad note from Carrie, but he says, tonight I walk with my brothers. And then it goes into that scene with all of the dead brothers together. It's very sad.
Oh. I said, and I've got a limousine out there a mile long with 25 women in it just dying for me to go, woo!
Which is that, does he actually say that in real life?
I don't know. He says it in the movie, Ric Flair. But that's like something he would say in real life.
Yeah, because the woo is real. Like, he would do that in real life.
Yes, Ric Flair is known for the woo. He also just, like, his persona was like, I am the most opulent, like, hedonist.
Yes. Yeah, and I feel like another one a little bit similar to, like, shows Kevin's personality. I forget when he says this, but he was like talking about the heavyweight champion. He was like, I don't even really want it that bad. I just love being out here with you guys.
Yeah.
And it's
love that.
It once again, just like all I want to do is be with my brothers. Like that reigns supreme, that reigns king over everything else that they're chasing after and trying to accomplish in life.
Hmm. We talked about this earlier, but I just gotta say it again. What's for dinner? I didn't make anything. I'm not hungry.
I have. It is so hard to be humble when you're looking like Ric Flair.
Yep. My list is done. That is all I had.
I had two other ones, but I'm like, it's hard to like really fit for quote tennis because these quotes, a lot of them are so, I don't know.
The only other one I have is, "We'll be your brother's dad."
Yeah.
That one.
Oh my god.
That's good.
Well, that's most of what I have down. I do want to ask you guys, because I was just thinking of this during this movie, and you can go as deep or as not as you want, but what have been areas of your life, probably growing up, that you felt like as a man you had to be a certain way that maybe didn't come naturally?
It's an interesting caveat there, but I will say the whole sports thing, like I like sports and I loved playing sports growing up, but after my freshman year of football, when I was, the outlook wasn't looking like I was going to be a starter when I got to the varsity, junior varsity level, I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I'm going to quit and be done. Yeah. And I'm glad I did that for myself, but there definitely was that like little bit of sadness of like, oh, I'm not meeting up to expectations. I'm not playing sports or playing football like I should. And I came back later on, like a couple years later, and played 1 year, but yeah, that's probably the closest thing I can say. It's like, especially in an athletic family, there is that like, my parents were very supportive, but there's almost that undertone that you just pick up like, oh, you got to play sports or do this or that. So it's probably the biggest thing.
Yeah. Yeah, mine's a little similar. I would say it came more from coaches that I had rather than family. But with, you know, growing up playing hockey, it was like, man, if anyone messes with you or anyone on your team, like you are getting in there and you're fighting. Like there's no like, okay, let's break it up. Let's not fight. And I just never, like in my whole 16 years of playing, like I never got in a fight that I instigated or like, unless like I was the one obviously being attacked, it's a different story. But like, sure. I was told by one coach who was like, the best thing you can do is just kind of laugh at them and walk away. But every other coach I had was like, no, you got to get in there and you got to fight for yourself, fight for your team. And so I think that was an interesting thing that maybe looking back on it formed me a little bit more than I thought of like that coach who did say like, no, you kill them with kindness sort of thing. Like they can feel dumb when you laugh at them or like, this is just not worth my time. But I feel like that's not a commonly maybe encouraged or enforced thing when it comes to like a really intense sport or moment like that with masculinity.
Yeah, I think it's the same for all of us. I think for me, it was just like, these sports are an option. These are not. As far as like, if I would have played soccer, I think there would have been a lot of like, I don't know about that. Not trying to throw anyone under the bus there. But I think that it's like my dad was very much, it was never like a you have to play football. But it was very much, it was something that was really meaningful to him. And I don't regret playing either. But I'm like, I don't know that I would have elected to do that if it was not encouraged. I remember in high school, our coaches, some of them in particular, who are just like, oh, you guys just got to get out there and hit somebody. And that's something that me and a few of my friends would always kind of mock.
Yeah, right.
Be like, oh, can't wait to just get out there and hit somebody.
That is why I'm here. Other reason.
All I want to do is get out there and hit somebody. Guys, can't we just get out there and hug somebody?
Totally. Goodness me.
Anything else?
Yeah, no, I don't have anything else.
I have two last things.
Yeah,
one, I think something that, and you talked about like how the second, someone said that the second part like really picks up and really gets intense after that. And I feel like the turning point, which this is like one of my favorite scenes in the movie, is when they're training at the house and Mike goes upstairs and puts on Tom Sawyer by Rush. And becomes like the montage of them like rising their way to the top. Mm. One, so cool. Once again, why I love Mike's character is because that is the role he played in like his brother's success. Like it wasn't, he's not going to be out there lifting with them. He's not going to be thrown down in the ring, but like he knew, man, like by putting on the song, it's going to like pump them up. And the way that like Carrie is lifting in the bench and that intro comes in with like, oh, so good. It helps when Rush is my favorite band. Moving Pictures
is
my favorite album of all time. So like when that song was chosen, I was like, yeah, there's like, no one can change my mind. This is the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, no also, wonder you love this movie.
A great literal needle drop. You see the needle dropping onto the record in the shot. It's like, bum, 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 bum.
Yeah.
It's so good. I don't even like that song, but I like it in this movie.
Yes.
It's so amazing. Like, I'm just like, this fits so well.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The soundtrack's really good. Like, they feature Blue Oyster Cult earlier, Creedence Revival, CCR. And so it's like there's all of these moments where like the music was just really well done. But that Tom Sawyer scene is just like perfect. But I feel like it's kind of the end cap on like things are about to go terribly wrong for the next hour plus.
Yep. It's like the height.
Yes. And another thing that another scene that I was shocked that I liked and appreciated, a personal gripe I have is at the end of biopics or movie or like movies that are telling a story that's true, it always feels like okay, before the credits roll, the screen is going to go black and there's going to be text that explains everything that happens after. Mm. Like, there's a part of me of like, why can't you show us that? Like, especially if it's only like one-liners, like, I get it. When it's like a court case or something where it's like long details like that happened after the movie. But I was like almost dreading that that was about to happen in the movie. Mm-hmm. But it was the first time where I actually really appreciated that happening and I really enjoyed it because it's the photo of the family. It's saying all these other things that don't really need to be shown. Like they weren't worthy of scenes and development. But they put such a great exclamation point on the movie of like the family photo at the end and everything. It just like as I'm like losing my emotions and like crying and weeping. I'm just like, wow, this is like for it to end on those encouraging notes of like, we'll be your brothers now. And then seeing how the family has like still been involved in wrestling and how their involvement has like reversed this family curse and their family of origin issues in a lot of ways. I just thought that was like, okay, this was needed and this was really good.
Yeah. I love the picture that they show at the end. There's a kid who looks like he's like, he's not like a toddler. He's probably like six and he's being thrown like 10 feet into the air. Like, who is this kid?
Yeah. I did notice that.
I will say the losing your emotions part, like I tear up actually a lot in movies. I don't really cry a lot in movies. In this one, I think especially watching it not in a theater, I think unfortunately sometimes in a theater I'm like, oh, I don't want to be seen crying in public, even though that's, I think I should be more comfortable with that. But as I was watching this time, I was like, oh, I think I might cry. And like all the brother stuff happened, I did not cry. And then when he is crying and his sons come up to him at the end, they're just like, what's wrong? And he's like, oh, and he like explains, like, I used to be brother, I'm not anymore. And they're like, well, and he's like, I'm sorry, you shouldn't see me crying. I'm your dad. And they're just like, it's okay, we cry all the time.
Yeah.
And like, we'll be your brother's dad. And that, I was like, like, like I was crying and like heaving. I was like, oh my gosh.
I almost view it as like it's the tension or like the sadness that you're holding inside the entire movie. Because I was the same way. I didn't cry with any of the scenes, like even in the scene where he lays Carrie on the table and like is just running his hands through his hair. Like that is so gut wrenching. But I was still just like locked in. And it's almost like you hold all of that intensity so that when they have that scene at the end of like, we'll be your brothers now. And it's just like, it's like the permission you have almost to let that all go because you're also holding that intensity, which I think is just a sign of a great movie that you are feeling the things they are feeling through and through. And like then there's just this emotional like dam that gets broken and it's just like the floodgates open at that point, which I that's like a testament to once again how great it was.
Oh my gosh. Also just like the children talking about and being so much more okay with their emotions, being like, we cry all the time, Dad. And like that kind of thing, and seeing the breaking of a generational thing where it's like for him, he probably wouldn't have even said that at that age because that probably would not have been okay at all. And even when the first brother dies, the dad's like, take off the sunglasses. He's like, we're not hiding anything. He's like, but also don't cry. And you're like, well, you can't do both. Yep. You can't be like, I can't hide this. And also I can't show anything. That is, and seeing that you are equipped with the tools you have and you do your best and you see this promise of this next generation. It's really beautiful.
Well, we good?
I think we're good.
Good.
I'm good.
Okay. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Show Me the Movies today and our discussion on The Iron Claw. Email us at themoviesshowme@gmail.com if you have any questions or comments. And remember to follow us on Instagram. We'll see you next time.
And always remember, look at my beautiful brothers! Yee-hoo!